welcome to Revolutionary Woman. My name is Tess Silverman. Women around the world are constantly creating ways to make a difference in their communities, and today's guest is no exception. Dr. Patricia Wright is a scientist and distinguished professor in the Department of Anthropology at Stony Brook University, New York. She has received the prestigious MacArthur Fellowship Genius Award and 3 Medals of Honor from the Malagasy government. In 2014, she was the first woman to win the Indianapolis Prize for Animal Conservation, equivalent to the Nobel Prize in Conservation. Dr. Wright is the founder and executive director of Stony Brook University's Institute for the Conservation of Tropical Environments and is the founder and executive director of the Centro Valbio, a research and training center in Ranomafana, Madagascar. After discovering a new species of lemur in 1986, she helped establish its habitat as a national park and a UNESCO World Heritage Site. She continues to lead research expeditions to remote places in Madagascar, which make valuable contributions to science. Dr. Wright has published over 200 scientific papers, authored 4 books, and has given hundreds of lectures to museums, universities, and societies throughout the U.S. and Europe. Her research and accomplishments have been featured in the award-winning documentary IMAX Warner Brothers film Island of Lemurs, Madagascar, narrated by Morgan Freeman, and most recently the documentary Ivrebor, The Lost Forest, which premiered in France in the fall of 2024. Hi, Dr. Wright. Welcome to Revolutionary Woman. How are you this morning?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for stopping by the show. I would love to start going, and because I have a bunch of questions regarding you and your work. Okay, so you grew up in rural Western New York State, and you grew up on a farm. What was it like for you growing up on a farm?
Well, I loved where I lived because I was very close to nature. And when you're growing up on a farm, you're very close to animals, and I've loved animals since I was a little girl. Mm-hmm. So I had a fairly free childhood where I could wander around in the forest and fall into the creeks and observe animals like raccoons and rabbits and deer.
Oh, how cool.
And I loved it.
That's awesome. Okay, so you are the oldest of 6 children. What was it like growing up with that many siblings? And being the oldest, what about it did you like?
Well, being the oldest of 6 siblings actually gave me leadership qualities, shall we say. Mm-hmm. Because, of course, you're given a lot more responsibility. Mm-hmm. When young children enter your family. And I was taking care of children a lot myself.
Right.
My mother was a stay-at-home mom, but 6 kids is a lot.
Yeah, right. Okay, so I read that you loved animals from a young age, and you had twin raccoons at one point. How did these raccoons come into your life?
Well, the truth was that somebody was out hunting and killed a raccoon to make a raccoon pie.
Ooh.
And didn't realize that there were babies, but there were babies, and they gathered the babies together, and my father happened to be nearby and brought them home.
Ah.
And that's how I got them to adopt.
Oh, wow.
I was young. I was under 4 years old, but
oh,
I
gosh.
Still love these little guys. And eventually my dad said we had to let them go back into the wild
because
they were wild animals.
Right.
And so my first experience was actually raising animals that eventually we had to let go back to where they came from.
Mm. Okay, so Dr. Wright, I saw that I read that you saw your first monkey when you went on a class trip to the Buffalo Zoo, and you were fascinated by them. How so?
Well, the thing about monkeys that's different from other animals is they have that, you know, you look into their eyes and you feel a connection that is very deep.
Mm.
And, you know, he was there in his little cage and he was doing somersaults and trying mm-hmm. to get the attention of the people outside the cage.
Right.
And I just thought, wow. I mean, what an interesting animal. I'd read about monkeys. Of course, we read about, George and mm-hmm. other monkeys, but this was the first time that I'd actually seen one in action, and I realized how how smart they were.
Okay, Dr. Wright, you are a scientist, a professor in the Department of Anthropology at Stony Brook University on Long Island. You're the founder and executive director of Stony Brook University Institute for the Conservation of Tropical Environments, and you helped create the fourth national park in Madagascar in 1991. What led you to create this park?
Of course, I was an assistant professor at that time, and I had no idea how to create a national park.
Mm-hmm.
But I was inspired because I had just discovered a brand new lemur to science, that I was in the act of describing and looking at the behavior of this new species. When timber exploiters came in, the loggers came in and started chopping down the trees.
Mm.
And so I went to the capital and I said to the director of Water and Forest, the Malagasy Department of Water and Forest, I said, you have to stop the logging because we have a brand new species of lemur, and we also rediscovered one that we thought was extinct.
Wow.
And he said, well, yes, I didn't know about that when I gave the concessions, but I gave the concessions. And besides, we're Madagascar. We have no money to make a park. It takes a lot to make a park. You have to have maps. You have to train the park rangers.
Mm-hmm.
You have to establish the infrastructure. Madagascar has no money.
Mm.
But if you find the money, Dr. Wright, then we will be happy to collaborate with you to make that a protected area.
Wow.
And so that created a real conflict for me, because being an assistant professor, you know, I'm being rewarded for doing good research, but mm-hmm. not for doing something like making a national park. It was, you know, I really worried about my career.
Mm-hmm.
But then I also thought, oh my goodness, I can't let these two species of lemurs go extinct.
Right.
This is the only place in the world that they existed. And so I decided that I would definitely help the Malagasy government. And then we started talking to USAID and the Liz Claiborne and Art Ortenberg Foundation and the MacArthur Foundation. And so eventually we got the money to make that a national park in 1991.
Wow. Wonderful. And you also founded the Center Valbio. So what is Center Valbio about, and why did you decide to found it, and what was your aha moment to do that?
Well, it's very important, I think, if you're going to establish, you know, working in a national park, I realize that there are rules and regulations, et cetera, et cetera. But I really wanted those kinds of rules and regulations to be based on science.
Mm.
And so what we've done with this Centre Valbio, what we've done is we've created a headquarters for doing scientific research on biodiversity, but working closely with the Madagascar National Parks to make that research applicable to management. And then I realized that we can never really work in Madagascar without working with the communities.
Mm-hmm.
Because the people of Madagascar that are around that park, I mean, they were prohibited from going into that protected area after it became protected. And that was the place where they got their construction wood, their medicinal plants, et cetera, et cetera. So we've worked very hard to work with these communities to improve on their health, on their schooling and education and conservation education, and also their economic development.
Mm-hmm.
So we helped to develop tourism in the region, and all of this was centered at the research station itself, learning, doing research to help tourism, to help management, and to help protect that biodiversity that's so special.
That's amazing. So you had mentioned that you had discovered the golden bamboo lemur and rediscovered the greater bamboo lemur. That is amazing. What was it about the lemurs that drew you to study them?
Well, I was working for Duke University, the Duke Lemur Center, and I had originally Been trained in primatology and worked with the night monkey in South America in Peru. Oh. But when I went over to Madagascar for the first time, working for the Duke Lemur Center, I realized what an incredible opportunity it was to do research in a country that had been closed to Western science for about 15 years.
Wow.
And then have the opportunity to work closely with the government to establish real conservation, mm-hmm. in addition to getting science accomplished. We've been discovering all kinds of new species, not just lemurs, but also frogs, chameleons, and plants. You know, it's a real natural paradise and an extraordinary place for research scientists to discover about new species and our ancient ancestors, those lemurs, that when I started studying lemurs, there were only about 32 species, and now there's 110 species. So wow. We have learned a lot.
That's wild. Oh, my goodness. I read CVB's core mission, Center of Vital Bios mission, which is CVB's core mission is to ensure that the long-term survival of the Ranomafana National Park and other ecosystems across the tropics so that future generations can enjoy and benefit from them. What challenges have you faced in maintaining the work you're doing?
Well, the challenges are, of course, making sure that we communicate with all levels. And that sounds easy, maybe, but it's not easy. So that means that you have to make sure the government knows what you're doing, mm-hmm. and that the local people know what you're doing, and that research scientists, not just in Madagascar, but also throughout the world, mm-hmm. are taking advantage of the research that's going on. And that requires also, I think of the Centro Vital Bios as a headquarters for science, and so that means workshops, you know, bringing people in from all over discussing issues.
Okay.
Because the biodiversity loss that we're experiencing in the tropics is great all over the tropics, but Madagascar is like on the cutting edge of extinction. It's very sad. 90% of the forest is gone.
Wow.
So it's very important to restore forests, to bring them back. Mm-hmm. To bring them back in a way that's an advantage for the communities, that they can be economically making some, you know, having some advantage. And so that's a challenge.
Yeah. You know,
it's a big challenge.
Now, are you still trying to do fundraisers to keep the work going with CVB?
I mean, fundraising is what I do almost all the time because it requires not just like one set of funders, but many sets of funders, because we have to have the people that will keep the science going.
Right.
But we also have One Health and Planetary Health that we're working on. So we're also working on conservation education. That's a different set of funders.
Mm-hmm.
We're working on economic development, and we're working with USAID and Catholic Relief Service, and that's a different set of funders.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a kind of a juggling act of trying to get funding from all these different organizations so that we can keep it going. And it's important to keep all those aspects going.
Right.
Because if you take away one, it weakens the whole picture. I've been doing a really integrative project with research as its heart is very... It's a challenge, but fun to do and wonderful when it works.
Yeah. I saw a YouTube program about your work in Madagascar, and in it you said, "My success in Madagascar is because I was trained at CUNY to think that people as well as the animals, conservation in Madagascar has to involve people." What has been the response of the Malagasy people regarding your work?
You know, we started, you know, in 1991 with the national park, working with the community. So in the very beginning, we started working with the community. So when we first went into the communities and started to talk about them about what what they needed to make a kind of a compensation for not being able to go into the park.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they didn't understand what in the world we were talking
mm-hmm.
about.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been this kind of, you know, a conversation and a collaboration and a partnership,
right.
an equal partnership that started with just a bunch of questions. And, you know, how are we going to be able to work together to make sure that the culture is maintained? I'm an anthropologist. I think it's very important that the local cultures be maintained into the future, but also progress being added into the formula in mm-hmm. a way so that culture remains, but economic and development occurs. They're richer than they were before.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a real challenge, because very often everywhere you see local peoples lose their culture in mm-hmm. order to have an economic gain. And as an anthropologist, I really didn't want that. I really thought we could do both.
Mm-hmm.
We could have the ceremonies that are so important to the culture, but also have them become economically more solvent. And I think at this point, we could say that many, many villages and many, many people are much better off economically now than they were then.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not finished with this job. We have to continue to work hard for both the people and for the wildlife.
Yeah,
I mean, they are beginning to understand that their livelihoods actually depend on the mm-hmm. wildlife, because that forest gives them the water
right.
that they need to grow their rice, and that forest gives them the protection against cyclones that they need to prevent landslides that caused total destruction of their villages, mm-hmm. Et cetera, and getting to understand the relationships between these wild places and their communities and how they can work together in a way that makes it better for both sides, for both wildlife and human communities.
Wow, amazing. So, I mean, did you ever think that when you first went to Peru that you would be, you know, you would go into conservation and be a conservationist, and now, like, really being a champion for conservation for these people and other places?
You know, it's funny when I think back at what I was doing in Peru, you know, doing basic research
mm-hmm.
and exploration. Conservation never even came into my mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Amazon where I was working was just a whole carpet of green. There were no roads. There was very little deforestation. And we're talking a long time ago in mm-hmm. the late 70s and early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
But when I went to Madagascar, it was the first time that I realized how important the conservation was going to be to our understanding of these tropical ecosystems, that if we didn't save them,
mm-hmm.
we wouldn't really be able to understand the interactions. We wouldn't be able to understand the medicinal plants that are possible, important scientific facts that we're now discovering. So it wasn't until I got to Madagascar that I thought that conservation was important.
Mm-hmm.
And even then,
mm-hmm.
I thought, you know, I'm a research scientist.
Right.
You know, am I going to... When I first got out of college, I actually worked as a social worker.
Mm-hmm.
And that gave me the kind of background of understanding, you know, people have different points of view,
mm-hmm.
and but you know, we're all on the same wavelength that we all want to have our lives. We want to have our lives maybe a little bit better than they are today. We want to have our children's lives to be better. So you know, that's what we talk about when we talk about conservation with the village elders. We
mm-hmm.
talk about, you know, the world for your grandchildren. What is it going to be like? Let's think about it and how we together can make that future for them a better place.
Right. Yeah, okay. So who would you credit for where you are now?
Oh, there's so many people. Mm-hmm. There's really just so many people. I mean, starting with my mother and father, of course, who encouraged me to love nature and to observe nature. But in my daughter, my beautiful daughter who came with me when she was 3 years old to the rainforest to study the monkeys, and who also came with me to Madagascar, learned Malagasy, went to high school in Madagascar. You know, I couldn't have done it without her collaboration and cooperation.
Hmm.
And of course, my mentors from college, Dr. Warren Kinsey, Dr. John Oates, Dr. Sadel Silverman. These are people who, you know, Eric Delson, these are people who really said, yes, what you're doing is important, and gave me, you know, the foundation of understanding science and conservation also. Mm-hmm. So, and Dr. Alwyn Simons, who at the Duke Lemur Center was the first person that introduced me to Madagascar.
Mm-hmm.
And Benjamin Andriana Mahaja, who worked with me in Madagascar from the very beginning. And we're like, you know, partners in conservation. And he works with the Malagasy government and the officials and the permits and everything.
Wow.
As well as the science. He's a doctor, too.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a doctor in geosciences. So many people have been pivotal
mm-hmm.
in making my career possible.
Yeah.
My brother too. I have family members who came over and helped out. My brother is a he's a building constructor, you know, something totally unrelated to conservation.
Uh-huh.
But in order to build, you know, headquarters for the Centro Valbio, he chipped in with his expertise, you know.
Wow.
So it's important. Ted Chappell is important. Ali Yabaglucio, he's one of the architects. That,
mm-hmm.
And of course, my donors. I mean, Robin and Jim Herrnstein had faith in us in the very beginning to give us the first funding for the headquarters.
Wow.
And if you go there now, which I hope that you will, I mean, we have very modern technology. We've got abilities to do DNA and DNA extraction. We have an herbarium. We have herbarium is a place where you collect plants. We have places where you collect the insects so that scientists can come and know immediately the identity of the insects.
Wow.
But so also... Yeah, so we can get the DNA from all of these new species and special species. You know, Madagascar is such a unique place because it's been isolated from the rest of the world for over 100 million years.
Oh, my gosh.
So everything on Madagascar is special and found nowhere else.
Mm.
And now we're explaining this to the local people so that they can take pride
mm-hmm.
in what they have, and so that they can show tourists.
Yeah.
And tourism is a big economic incentive
yes.
for the local people to appreciate their wildlife.
That's great. So going forward, what are your goals for the community you're involved in?
So what we've been working on recently, and these are some immediate goals, to get more people trained and to send the local community to high school and to university, to get them trained to use computers
mm-hmm.
and to have the skills that you need to do jobs. We've been doing a lot of that because Madagascar has been kind of left behind, shall you say, in the past, but we got to catch them up.
Yeah.
So that they can become the importance of Madagascar. You know, there's only four countries in the world that contain half the species on Earth. You know, that's amazing. And one of those countries is Madagascar.
Wow.
So we want them to be proper stewards of this extraordinary numbers of species that are interacting. We want them to really appreciate it. We want them to take advantage of the opportunities that will come because of the work that we can do with climate change and restoring habitat and, mm-hmm. you know, all the... So we're working even closer with the communities, giving them more responsibilities, giving them more training. Mm-hmm. Citizen science is actually something that we do in Madagascar now, where the local people and the headmen are taking the data on the rainfall and on the numbers of individual species. And then they record that, send it to a central database, and then they're paid small salaries to do this work.
That's amazing. You know, so it's really helping the community and continue to thrive, as opposed to just being being left behind. You're really pushing them.
Yeah, left behind is one of the poorest peoples on Earth. Mm. When I first got there, they were so poor. But things are improving. And we want them to do more protected areas. Another goal is to expand the protected areas and these community protected areas that are actually being protected by the communities and monitored by the communities. That's another one of our goals. Hmm. And to connect with global networks. Mm-hmm. Madagascar is kind of the orphan and the stepchild that's often left out of global networks. So we want to make sure that the Malagasy and their data is incorporated. And so it's a big job. We're all working hard to do that, but it's working fairly well. And I'm very optimistic about our future if we can keep going on this track of protecting forest and training local people and communities to protect these forests to reforest.
Yeah.
One of my top goals is to reforest as much of Madagascar as we can. And I think that's right now, it's the Malagasy government also has that goal. So it's good we can work hand in hand together. But I want to make sure that reforestation is with endemic species of trees, in a way that will be an advantage to the local people.
Yep.
So we're putting these high-value crops like Malagasy vanilla, and we have peppercorn, some of the best black pepper in the world. Mm. And so we grow that on the endemic trees and then train the people, the local people, and give them the opportunity to have warehouses to keep quantities of these spices and trucks to get them to market, and have them be real important players in these high-value crops that Madagascar has and we'll be able to expand.
That's amazing. I love that, because you're really teaching them to, you know, make sure that they can grow, and also not just in their community, but globally, and that is so important to keep them going. So that's amazing. Okay, so if anyone wanted to know more about you and Centro Valbio, or if someone wanted to get involved with your organization, how would they go about it?
Well, we have a website. It's called CENTREVALBIO. That's the name of the research station, CentroValbio.org. So they can go on the web, they can go on our web space, which is connected with Stony Brook University. I am a professor at Stony Brook University, and we work very closely with researchers everywhere, but especially at Stony Brook. Or they could contact me at patricia.wright@stonybrook.edu. Mm-hmm. And if they want to do internships or they want to come and help out at the research station, or if they of course want to donate, because we do require donations to keep our operations going. Those are the places that they could give the funding or ask the questions about internships. Okay. And if you're a student, study abroad. We have 3 study abroads a year. Any university student is eligible. We have 3 weeks in January, 6 weeks in May, June, July, and almost 3 months in the fall semester. So please, if you're in a university, any university, just apply for our program. It's extraordinary. You get to see all the ecosystems of Madagascar, the baobab forest, the extraordinary dry forest, the wet forest, the coral reefs, the mangroves, everything. It's really an amazing program.
Oh, so, Dr. Wright, when do you have time to slow down? Or do you slow down? I mean, I'm listening to you. And it's like, I know you're teaching during the year, and then you go to Madagascar or travel somewhere else. When do you slow down? Or do you?
No, slowing down is not something I do very well. But because there's so much to do.
Yes.
And I have lots of graduate students and undergraduate students that help me out. So, they give me the energy that keep going. So
that's wonderful. Yeah, that's really awesome.
So much to do. Madagascar is an amazing place.
Mm. So if you had one thing to change that you wish you had done years ago, would there be one?
Wow, that's an interesting question. One thing to change. I would have had more graduate students sooner because I think that my graduate students who have now gone on to work in all different universities and who are still working in Madagascar, I think they are the fire that keeps things going.
Mm.
And, I think that's one thing that I would like is to have even increased. I've had 35 graduate students, so I can't complain too much. But even more would be great.
And my last question is, if you could go back in time, what advice would you give your younger self?
What advice would I give my younger self? Because I think I was always afraid of failure, that this wouldn't work. It was seems like I was taking risks, and I'm glad I took them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I worried more than if I would have known that it was going to work out okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it's, stress is, well, in some ways, it's, I guess, a fuel for success, but I think it's a little harder on you if you're so stressed out. So if I would have known that things would have turned out okay, it would have been easier for me.
Mm-hmm.
Less tears during the middle of the night, you know. Uh-huh. It's like it is hard when you're struggling so hard to make something happen that nobody's done before.
Right. Wow. Well, Dr. Wright, thank you so much for coming on the show and for sharing your work and your life with me. I love what you're doing, and I am so excited for what other things you'll be doing regarding conservation and regarding, the discovery of new species in Madagascar. I really love that your passion to continue this is just ongoing. So thank you for what you're doing. I really hope that, you and your graduates continue the work because it's so important. I love that you discovered these lemurs because my only, I guess, idea of lemurs was from, I guess, a movie. And I didn't know that how amazing they are, and all the different species that you've encountered. So thank you so much for all the work that you're doing.
Well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me, and you are cordially invited to come to Madagascar anytime, and I'd love
thank
to show you.
You
and all of the people that are listening to this, Madagascar.
I may take you up on that one day. I would love that. Oh, my goodness.
Great.
Well, with that, thank you so much, and have a great day, and I will talk with you soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's our show for today. I've posted more information about Dr. Patricia Wright on revwoman.com. Thank you for listening, and I hope you'll tune in every other Thursday for another episode of Revolutionary Woman. You can listen to Revolutionary Woman on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. Just a little note. I've launched a Patreon account to support the show. All proceeds will go to producing and editing the episodes to give my poor husband a break for being my personal IT and production department. He wrote this. The address is patreon.com/revwoman.